Welcome back to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. This week we bring on an incredible artist, Funky McClunky, sculptor, scanner, 3D resin printer, incredible artist that just is insanely good at Star Wars figures. If you want more Toys on Tap, you could like, follow, rate, review wherever you get podcasts. We love it. It's an easy way to support the show. If you want to support us even further, you can jump on all socials and YouTube at Toys on Tap. Subscribe, hit that bell. We'll get you all the new video content. And if you want to jump on and support even more, you can jump on the Patreon, patreon.com/toysontap. Easy way to support the show. We would love it. I love my Patreon subscribers. That's where we put all the extra nitty-gritty episodes. That's where we put the video interviews. That's where we put all the good stuff. Now let's get to this week's episode, Toys on Tap. Pump nice. That you're on.
Nice to meet you. Thanks for having me on, man.
Good to meet you. I think you're already one of my favorites because it's so good to do like 9 a.m. on a Monday. That's so helpful for my week.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're welcome, first of all. But no, that works for me too, honestly, because you're West Coast, I presume, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, 12 noon, totally fine. And my schedule is exceedingly flexible. So,
hey, I'm pumped that you're here. I want to dive into your story. There's a lot of stuff I want to talk about that ranges from like if you do this full time to last year there was an issue with you and another sculptor. I want to talk about all kinds of stuff, especially because what you do is so specific. It is like niche of niche, and I love that. And so before we dive in, please introduce yourself and tell us what you do.
Yeah, I'm CJ. I go by Funky McClunky. And I make custom 3D printed toys, 3D scans. I used to do resin casting, but I don't really do that much these days because I've just dove right in so hard with the 3D printing and got kind of good at that. So that's been more my focus. And I've done a lot of Star Wars crap, mainly because that's just how I got into it. And I've started to expand out beyond that. I really want to expand out more, honestly, but every time I try to expand out into something else, you know, it's well received, but then I get 1,000 more emails about, you know, specific Star Wars characters that people want. So I'm like, all right, well, hell, I got to go back to that. All right. So that's me for now.
You know, as before we always do history and stuff, but you stepped out of the Star Wars thing for a guy. The Big Matt guy, he has that like moon shaped head. He's from that commercial.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I got one right here, Mac Tonight.
Yeah. So one of my favorite actors is that guy because he's
Doug
Jones. He's the guy from Pan's Labyrinth, and he's the guy from he's Abe in Hellboy. And it's like one of the best actors that no one knows because he's always covered.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. And I try to keep my toy art business world life, whatever, as a little bit separate from my like legit professional career, but there are intersections. And I don't have toy making on my LinkedIn page, but anybody who Googles my first name and, you know, they could figure out who I was. So it's not like some secret identity thing. But what's funny is when I made that figure, somebody pointed out that it was Doug Jones, and I couldn't believe it. I had to go back and look, and I found like pictures of him and all that. And I ended up tagging him in one of the photos that I put up because I absolutely did not expect him to remember this at all. But like in my legit career, I work in entertainment, I work in television, and I actually worked on a show with Doug, and he played an alien creature.
He did.
And I remember, you know, I met him a couple times on set. And super nice guy, so unassuming, just like totally cool guy, whatever. And in my Instagram post, I said something like, you know, when I met Doug, like, you know, this was like 12 or 13 years ago. I was like, if I had known that he was Mac Tonight, that would have steered our conversation in a completely different direction, because that's just too funny. Like of all random characters for that guy who, like you said, Pan's Labyrinth. I mean, he's been the dude behind so many amazing characters and creatures. and nobody knows really, and he can walk down the street on a sale, except maybe at Comic-Con or something, you know. And I would never have known that he was behind this giant moon face.
What was so cool about it, this is even further down this rabbit hole, he has this moment where he's talking to the camera about being these characters, and he's just like very nonchalant about it. But what he does say is like his gifting in acting came second to the fact that he was willing to sit for 8 hours a day in makeup. Because like the costume from Hellboy, that like every piece of that is looks like latex or whatever it is, and so you're covering head to toe, and then you got to go through 8 hours of filming.
You got to have enormous patience. Enormous.
Unreal. Couldn't do it. But we're not here for him, we're here for you. Whenever I look at a new artist, I'll go through their whole Instagram. And the one that I want to talk about kind of starts off the podcast with, tell me about the toys and stuff that you grew up with. And I found a picture of your old R5 droid. And so tell me what you grew up with. Tell me those cartoons. What kind of shaped that childhood that you're in?
Yeah, I mean, listener of the podcast, so I know the I know your background a little bit, and I know other folks that you've talked to in the different age groups that everybody seems to fall into. And I know you're more of a 90s kid, Ninja Turtles kind of thing.
Yeah,
I was born in the late 70s, so I was definitely a Star Wars kid, Transformers, He-Man, that kind of thing. Those G.I. Joe, those were the cartoons I watched. Lot of movies and cartoons that I probably shouldn't have seen at the age that I did that, you know, kind of scared the hell out of me. But, you know, at this age, like now I'm like, no, I'm not letting my kids watch that. Are you crazy? Like, but I totally did. And Lord knows what kind of effect it had on my subconscious, but yeah, all the typical early 80s stuff, running home after school to watch cartoons, G.I. Joe. I still have a cassette tape somewhere around here. That's like, it's called like it's a VHS cassette, and it has like my mom's handwriting on it that says like CJ's mix or something. And it was like afternoon, like I would record episodes of G.I. Joe or whatever was on in the afternoon, just in case I didn't finish my homework in time to watch it, like that kind of thing. So I wore that tape out, but yeah, that type of stuff, typical 80s kid stuff.
That's the kind of tape we need to release to the public.
You know, what's funny is I was converting some old VHS for my parents, like family movies and stuff. And that's when I found it. And I put it in the VCR, and I mean, it's all, you could tell it's been recorded over 8,000 times because it's all squiggly and the quality is trash. And there would be like a G.I. Joe episode. And then there'd be like an Alf episode or something. Like it was a straight up 80s time capsule. But the funniest part is that in between, you know, cause you would hit record on those things, or the automatic timer would kick in to record when a show came on, you'd always pick up some of the commercials, or there'd be a little gap in there where you would get a glimpse of something that was on the tape beforehand. Mm-hmm. And so in between almost every little bit of my recording was part of an episode of The Young and the Restless, the like 80s soap opera. So obviously I stole this tape from my mom.
Yeah.
Who had recorded her soap operas on it beforehand.
What a crazy thing to be watching and recording The Young and the Restless.
Ridiculous. And to this day, I still remember Young and the Restless character names because it was just on in the background all the time when I was a kid. It just like seeped into my head. Like I can't.
Yeah. My mom would alternate between that. And then I'm not a fan of Star Trek. I never was, but the only thing I remember is whichever one Worf was in, he was always on my TV because it was always on. Yeah. And so my love for like the weird aliens in Star Wars comes from seeing this weird guy on my TV all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
that show was in syndication so much that you're right. I mean, you could flip on the TV at any time that like a kid your age would be like wanting to flip on a TV, and chances are you'd be within 30 minutes one direction or another of a
next. And it was always it's like I always get like glimpses. It's like someone flashes a light and all of a sudden something plinks on. But it's like Worf is there and then John Stewart walks in. Patrick Stewart. Sorry.
I know. That would be a whole different show.
Yeah. He like walks in and you're like, I only see that clip every time.
I'm pretty sure that series of events was in every single episode,
though. Some panic happened. So you, I mean, the fact that you had, and you're not only a listener, you're a helper with the podcast, got some corrected stuff going on. And I figured out like the past few episodes have sounded better, which has been super helpful. I think with, which is sometimes people will reach out and they'll be like, hey, this week something happened.
Right.
What was it? And they won't give me enough information. So you're like, I guess we're going to see what happens next week.
Right.
Yeah. So
no, this was just like I listen at the gym. It's my podcast time, and I'll switch between, you know, I'll one podcast will end and then I'll be like, oh, what's the new, I'll switch over to Toys on Tap and listen to the new episode of that. And I just noticed it was quieter. So I'm like, hey, I'm an audio engineer in my past life. I'm super audio nerd. Like, I'll just reach out and ask. And I hate doing that kind of thing sometimes, because like, people will reach out to me, you know, about, you know, toy stuff, and they'll be like, hey, have you tried the blah, blah, blah printing setting for da, da, da? And I'm like, yeah, man, come on. Yes. Thank you. So I hesitate. I don't want to like, you know, step on anybody's toes or be a turd about it. But anyway, if I could help, I'm happy that I did.
Yeah, it was super helpful. So you have these toys, and the fact that you have pictures and still have them.
Yeah.
As you get older, you don't go through the same thing of getting rid of all of them.
I did and I didn't. I was selective about it, in the sense that, I was an only child. Okay. And apparently, you know, if not that this would be the case, but if any of my childhood friends happen to be listening to this podcast, then my apologies. I was probably a nightmare to play with, because judging by how many of the tiny little accessories from all my original toys that I still have, I didn't have to hand them down to a little brother to play with or anything like that. And I obviously didn't let my friends touch them, or I don't know what I was doing, but somehow I ended up with them all packed away, and they sat in my parents' basement for years and years. And they just left them there. They even moved a couple of times, and they would move these giant boxes that just said like CJ's crap on it or something. And they moved it with them. And then one day when I got older, I finally, you know, started having my own reliable places to live, then I they were like, okay, you got to come and get some of this stuff. And
yeah,
and I was very pleasantly surprised at how much, I mean, I guess they were pack rats, I'm a pack rat, I guess, I don't know, I was very surprised by how much they had of my childhood toys. And so I was able to pull them out, and there were some accessories missing and things like that. And so like that R5 that you referenced, that you saw on Instagram, that is my childhood R5. I still have most of my childhood Star Wars stuff, and the labels are worn off and the paint's rubbed, and I swapped heads on some of them, and you know, whatever, but I'll never get rid of those unless I absolutely have to, because it's just, I mean, a beater R5 like that is worth way more to me sitting in the cabinet than it would be if I ever tried to sell it or anything. That's for sure.
To only have the sticker like messed up on an R5 is pretty impressive. Like,
I mean, if I turned his head too many times, it might pop off. I don't know. I'm not going to test that one out.
We all go through a phase where we like get rid of or pack away. I mean, there is probably toys. I would like to say that I kept some. Odds are I didn't keep anything. There might be toys somewhere in my parents' attic, but in order to get to those, I got to go through so much other junk. So it's just going to stay up there.
Right.
It's crazy, but it's cool to hear when people have that. And when people ask about Toys on Tap, the thing that I like to describe to them is like, if you have ever wanted something and then find out that you have a box of it in your parents' attic, like that's the feeling of Toys on Tap. That's what we talk about.
That's gold, man. It really is. A few years ago, I was living in California, and I came back to the East Coast for Christmas, and was staying with me and my kids, and my wife were staying with my parents. And again, this was a house that I did not grow up in. They moved a few times, and we needed to wrap something at the last minute. My mom says, hey, go upstairs to the guest room closet. That's where I keep all the wrapping paper. You can grab something out of there. So I run upstairs. Again, a room I never lived in, a closet I never used. I open up the door, and all of her wrapping paper is stuffed in the original box from my Ewok village.
Oh my gosh.
And I thought I was going to pass out. And I'm like, first of all, the fact that even survived. And secondly, that she's moved it from house to house to keep wrapping paper in all these years. I came downstairs with the box with no wrapping paper, and I'm like, I'm sorry, Mom, you got to find something else to put your wrapping paper in. I'm taking this home with me. This is crazy. But little finds like that, like that's, it hasn't happened very often, but after they gave me the massive dump of all my childhood stuff to deal with. But when something like that happens, it really is like, it is gold. You're just like, wow, this is incredible.
Yeah. And I mean, having, as you start to pass through that, are we talking like you begin some kind of art, you get into music because you're surrounded by guitars right now.
Yeah.
So what is it, the next thing that kind of happens as you get past toys and probably early teenage years?
My nerdiness morphed from toys into music. And anybody who knows me has heard this story before, but I joked that my supervillain origin story is that I found, when I was in like sixth or seventh grade, the high schoolers used to ride the same buses before us, and they'd drop them off and then come get the middle schoolers. And one of the high schoolers left a Guns N' Roses Appetite for Destruction cassette on one of the seats in the bus. And I got on and sat down, and there it was. And it was like contraband. I mean, it had a Salacious cover on it and like some weird robot scene with a lady with a it was crazy. And so to a sixth grader, you know, I had to keep it. I took it home, popped it in my boombox after school. And that was like this life-changing experience. I can trace every poor decision I've ever made back to that moment where I decided to, like, basically, you know what? I don't want to do math anymore. I don't want to play baseball anymore. Like, I want to play guitar. And that started the spiral into, that was my main artistic expression for, you know, decades.
Yeah.
Was music. I was never much of a visual artist. I tried, I sucked. I always wanted to. I had my girlfriend in high school and after high school was an accomplished artist. And I was always jealous of that. I thought that was great. And I tried, and I'm like, it's just not for me.
So tell me about all the high school bands that you were part of then.
God, I did every, in high school, it was every, kind of like indie rock. I mean, I came of age in the grunge era. So like I grew up playing Metallica songs and Guns N' Roses songs, and then grunge hit and everybody wanted to sound like Nirvana and Pearl Jam. And so, you know, we kind of had a little grungy indie band in high school, and you know, looking back on it, it's, you know, I still have a lot of those tapes and I listen to those occasionally for a little nostalgia, and they're horrible, but in all the right ways. You know, like, all right, these guys were having fun. And, you know, we'd play the high school parties we were the way I describe it is that it was kind of a transition from like nerd kid life into weirdo art life, in that the guys that were in the bands in high school, they always had to be kind of cool with everybody, because if the drama kids threw a party, they wanted a band to play. You get the high school grunge band to play. If the jocks threw a party, they wanted to get a band to play. They'd get the same, you know, and so like we really just kind of had to be cool with everybody, and like nobody really hated on the music dudes. We were just guys that all we wanted to do was just play rock and roll, and that was it. So it really, as far as turning into an artistic person, it was really a great way to transition. I mean, there's a lot of nerds in music, you know, and it was a really great way to transition my love of sci-fi and nerdy stuff into the art world in a way that I would like to say proved financially viable, but no, not so much.
Yeah, none of the stuff we love doing like that proves to be financially viable.
No, not at all.
Yeah, my biggest thing I love about Toys on Tap is every once in a while they get weird in the comments or like in messages, and they'll send me one that's like something like how. The last one was like, how dare you make a profit off this community or something? And I was like, profit? Yeah. What is a profit off of this? Like, I may be the biggest like toy artist interview podcast in the world, but that is, it's still this big.
Right. Exactly.
So it's like, that's awesome. That's awesome that I get to be that big of a star, but also profit is such a weird term.
No, it really, and honestly, like, I mean, I know you're a customizer at heart yourself. You're a dude who makes toys, and you know, I dabble, you know, like you, I enjoy looking for ways that I can be involved in a community of artists and toy makers and weirdos like myself. And yet also, of course, like get my name out there a little bit more. Yeah. So help the community, help myself. Everybody wins. I don't feel like any of us are making this giant amount of money.
No.
To be life-changing and like we're like capitalizing on people's creativity and blah, that's ridiculous. Get out.
Yeah. How did you get, I mean, from playing music, how did you become an audio engineer? How did we get to that point before we find
honestly
toys?
For home recording. I mean, I had bands and we would pay, I had some good friends that were, went the professional music route in terms of like, they went to like school for engineering and like, you know, became engineers and producers and we would pay them, these guys to go to their recording studios and make records. And as the technology improved and, you know, we would always make demos on 4-track tapes and things like that. And in our rehearsal space and studios and stuff. And then we'd go make the real record in a real studio. And so I knew about multi-track recording and all this super nerdy, music stuff. But I wanted, as technology improved with digital recording and home studios and all that, I wanted to get to where we could maybe conceivably do our own records ourselves. And of course now everybody does that. I mean, everybody, mm-hmm. you know, anybody with a laptop can be a musician these days, but, I just wanted to learn as much as I could about that to save money. Honestly, it was like, we as a band can invest X amount of dollars into a nice computer and this software and mics and all that. And then we can record and record and record, or we can pay thousands of dollars, you know, paying by the hour in legit recording studios. And, you know, we weren't putting out records that were, I mean, we weren't filling stadiums. So like, we weren't U2. We could put out lower quality recording records and it wouldn't really matter. So, that's how I got into that. And I was never, that was never my main source of income as an audio engineer. It was always like, I would have friends who were in bands who were like, hey, you know, I heard the recording you did for blah, blah, blah. You know, can we come do some songs? I'd be like, yeah, absolutely. And then they would come to our rehearsal studio and we would do a short, you know, a small record for them or whatever. So that was really just a way to try to make some money back on all the time and money and effort I was putting into buying music gear and being a musician just for my own artistic stuff.
So. Yeah. Did you at some point, I mean, artists go through this a lot. Did you at some point as you were making music just make a decision like, I'm not going to be a rock star?
Yeah.
But yeah. I'm going to still love this for the game.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think that happens within like, you know, with any artistic endeavor, you have to be like, I had a friend recently, just the other day, he said something amazing. He said, I'm trying, he was talking about doing another record. And he said, I want to find that sweet spot between something that's creatively fulfilling.
Empire Blister. Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 2.75-inch or 1.18-0. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters.
Now sponsor Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on check. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's TOYSOMTAP 10.
Empire Blisters. Empire Blisters.
And financially ruinous. And not even like financially detrimental, but like ruinous. Like I will wreck my life if I consider pursuing this. And I thought that was just a great way of describing how I've approached creativity for the last 30 years is really just like trying to figure out what that balance is. And so, there was a time when I was working in a pizza shop to pay the bills, doing a little graphic design, making band posters and stuff on the side, and then playing with my band. And we'd jump in a van and we'd go play a few shows in Florida. And then we'd come back and I'd be back at the pizza place. And I remember at one point being like exactly what you just said, which is I'm always going to love this, but I got to actually try to find a way to make a good living and support myself and still be able to fund my artistic endeavors, but maybe have some sort of stable future. Cause I was tired of working in a pizza shop and living in a van and being a bum, you know? And so that's how I ended up getting into entertainment marketing, because the TV business is just like really full of artistic rejects and it's an island of misfit toys, you know, of people who just like end up in it from all sorts of weird places, because it's a way to working in television and like on the business side of it, it's a way to kind of be a little creative and not want to shoot yourself. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, find legitimate employment. So at one point I just I kind of had to put the music on the back burner and make that,
yeah,
make that the thing.
So as you've been going through, when did we creep in and find toys again?
Oh, man. I had customized some stuff in the 90s. In the 80s when I was a kid, I mean, like, I couldn't find a Snake Eyes figure, but I had an extra Storm Shadow figure. So I literally Sharpied him black so that he could be my Snake Eyes figure. I still have that dude somewhere around here in a box somewhere. But that, and, you know, as a kid, like, swapping heads on Star Wars guys, He-Man dudes. And then in the 90s, I went through a phase where I had rediscovered all my old toys, and I was really thinking about the characters that they didn't make. And so then it became, you know, I would go to the store and buy, you know, I was doing kit bashing and buying random toys at thrift stores and wherever and putting them together and painting them. And that's when I actually got into, like, actually painting and using, actually sculpting additional parts and, you know, adding hair to a figure and that kind of thing. And then I put that aside to focus, you know, I mean, music was the main jam. And then, if I'm speaking completely honestly, it was, I was living in LA, like eight years ago or something. And I was not happy in my job and I needed a creative outlet. And I did not have a place where we were living in LA. I did not have a music studio. I had everything packed away and I had like an acoustic guitar sitting in a corner that I could ding around on. And I, so it was not really a good outlet for me. And I saw a video on YouTube that one of your other guests referenced just a few days ago, where a guy, or a few episodes ago, where a guy took an old Tron figure and just made a cast of it using, like, you know, silicone molds and, you know, the Umu stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm glad to know that same video inspired more than just more than just one dude. But I saw that and I'm like, oh man, that's something I could do in my garage. I had a weird garage with a weird workbench there. I'm like, I could experiment with some casting. And so I did. And it was really just like casting Star Wars toys, figures that I had there with me, and trying to figure out the kind of the chemistry of it all, because I am just a huge dork for that kind of thing. And I like mixing weird resins and colors and all that. But I never even considered at the time trying to, like, really share it with anyone or post pictures of it or make any money off of it. It was really just, I needed something artistic to do that flexed that muscle for me at a time when I couldn't play music.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I completely forgot about that after we moved back to the East Coast. And there were a few years where I still had my collection of toys. I was still a toy guy, but I wasn't really making anything. And then I started just randomly, probably about 6 months before COVID hit, I was like, oh, I should dig out those old molds and see if they're still any good. And they had all kind of fallen apart. And I cast a few things with it, but, like, you know, my droids would come out missing their feet, that kind of thing, because the molds had just deteriorated and I didn't have a good pressure pot situation or anything. So it was all bubbly and weird. And then I saw Trash Compactor Customs, who sells a lot of Star, for anybody who doesn't know, sells a lot of Star Wars 3D printed figures. And I ordered some stuff from him. He's in the UK, ordered some stuff. And it showed up at my house and I'm like, man, this is great. I had no idea that 3D printing had gotten to this point where you could actually do that kind of detail on tiny figures.
Yeah.
And I was at that point, I was like, well, I'm just sold on this. I got to figure out how to do this. And right after that is when COVID hit and I was like, well, I'm going to be locked in my house for God knows how long. Bought a 3D printer, bought another 3D printer, bought some software. Next thing you know, it's a whole operation. I'm friends with Mark now. So thanks, Mark. Appreciate you inadvertently inspiring me like that.
So you get to sculpting. And I'm assuming it couldn't have been a week before you were like, okay, I got to do vintage Star Wars. Like, it
pretty much.
Yeah. So, but what's interesting about your work is that you try to stay with the Kenner style is what it looks like. Mm-hmm. And which means getting details down that the, like, people's hands would have sculpted all these years ago. Yeah. And on top of that, what looks like some 3D scanning as well. So, and then correcting and doing all that. A lot of trial and error. Tell me how we ended up there.
A lot of trial and error. Honestly, the 3D sculpting Well, so first of all, and this kind of leads into, you had hinted earlier about an issue that I had had with another sculptor last year, but there was a guy who had a bunch of scans of vintage Kenner figures that he sold through cults3d.com, along with some original designs that he had made. And I thought that was great. I'm like, super cool. I was learning 3D printing at the time, and I wanted some files that I knew were kind of ready-made and I could print and have good success as my first things. So I downloaded a bunch of those, printed them, kind of studied how they were put together, and really saw, I started really thinking like, I could take a crack at this. And so I tried a few using ZBrush and Mesh Mixer as the software. And I never really took to those tools very well. There was something about ZBrush that just didn't speak my language. I don't know. And so I one of the first things that I designed originally was a reproduction of the original Kenner prototype of Jabba's six-boobed dancer named Yarna.
Yeah.
And for those of you who are watching this video, I actually have one right here, but this is her. And I took the limited photos we have of that prototype and tried to replicate it as closely as possible.
Yeah.
At that point, my abilities with face detail, I was not very good. And so I actually ended up subbing out. I had to get some help from like somebody who actually knew what they were doing to help me finish the face and make it good and all that. Some of the detail in the skirt and all that. And looking back on it, I'm like, man, I barely did anything on that figure. That was really like, I really relied on somebody much more talented than me to that happened. But it was such a learning experience. I dug into the way that those files were constructed, and I was like, okay, this is going to help me figure out how to use ZBrush better. It didn't. Then I discovered Nomad Sculpt, which is for the iPad, and allowed me to use a pencil, and that changed everything for me, because then it was a tool that like worked in a language that I could speak. Mm-hmm. And it just, I don't know why, but it just made so much more sense to me. And that's when I started actually like, okay, I can design my own figures, and actually they'll be quality enough to actually put out. Because, you know, as you said, the Kenner style, I want it to be Kenner style. I don't want it to be too detailed. I want it to be detailed enough so that you can tell who the character is. Yeah. But I'm not doing 9 million points of articulation. I'm not doing eyelashes and earrings and things like that. You know, this is it. I need to walk that line between good detail and deliberately bad detail, which is.
Yeah, which that's a good line. You know, I sometimes people will call or send a message and say like, hey, can you turn me into a toy? I've gotten to the point where I say no to all of them, except like the fun, interesting ones.
Same.
And when I do it, there at one point someone was like, this doesn't look like me. And I was like, well, okay, let's pause for a second. It does.
Yeah.
But also, if you're wanting detail, my fee needs to go up exponentially, because I need to. And then I held up the old Luke Skywalker and I said, this looks nothing like Mark Hamill.
Right.
It didn't back then. It doesn't now. But we knew that it was Mark Hamill. And they saw that and they were like, okay, now we understand.
Right.
And I was like, if you want a toy that looks exactly like you, I can do that. But your fee just went up to $1,900.
Right. It's going to take a while and it's going to cost a lot. Yeah, absolutely.
It's so crazy. And I've seen some of your like up close shots of the ones that you've sculpted and like the details that you're adding in and all that stuff. And it's crazy. And like the learning curve, people have told me that Nomad is the one to go with.
Yeah.
Like, tell me about this learning curve when you're first starting.
I think that anyone who doesn't have any experience with any sort of visual editing tool is going to struggle a little bit more than somebody who's maybe used Photoshop or used InDesign or even video editing, any sort of like linear editing program, that sort of thing. Like it becomes easier to wrap your head around things like symmetry, and you're really just like kind of overlaying your 2D design knowledge onto that. Secondly, people who have experience in casting, hand sculpting, things like that, is going to give you a leg up too. There are people who ask me for advice all the time about Nomad Sculptor, about just getting into it in general. And some of these folks come from backgrounds like that. And some of them come from a background of strictly being a collector and having no creative ability, experience, inclination, whatever. And good for them for wanting to get into it. But the learning curve on that is going to be a lot steeper than it would be for somebody like you, who's got experience actually making toys in the physical world. Yeah. Because then really you just have to make your brain switch into, okay, I'm going to do this same thing. It's not overnight. It's not super easy. And I look back at some of the figures that I first put out, and I'm a bit of a George Lucas in this regard. I like to go back and tinker with my old designs, but like I can never really truly let anything go. But, you know, I look back at some of the early things that I did and I'm like, oh man, I didn't know what the heck I was doing in Nomad. I got to fix this belt or this whatever, you know, and I'll tweak it and upload new files to Cults for anybody who downloaded it before, but you can do it. You can do
I've thought about it. I've wanted to get on, but I think the startup cost always for anything is like, you just need an iPad and Apple Pencil. Like, let's bare minimum. And, but you've gotten really good. Like if no one has told you, which I'm sure they have, because you even did, like, there's things that you've done that don't exist. So like the Chewbacca or the Wookiee family.
Oh yeah.
Like that doesn't exist anywhere. And you were like, let's just start sculpting.
Well, you know, what's funny about that. And this is going to sound silly, but that was actually one of the easier ones because, you know, you were asking earlier about the scanning that I do. I did scan with my digital scanner, every original Kenner figure, every single one of them, they're all available, online. And so I had like the Chewbacca scan, and fully articulated all the different pieces, the limbs and everything. And the only photos that exist of the Kenner prototypes of the Wookiee family were kitbashed there at Kenner around the holiday special, in like 78, I guess. Mm-hmm. And they really did just take a Chewbacca figure and they shaved off his bandolier and little bag thing and gave him a different paint color, and that was his dad. Mm-hmm. And then they literally sculpted clay boobs on him, and that was his wife. And so I wasn't really trying to create screen accurate figures here. I was trying to reproduce those crappy Kenner prototypes. Yeah. And so it really was as easy as just like doing those same things that they did, only doing it digitally. And honestly, his son, the kid, was the only real tough one, because they had based that on an Adventure People Fisher Price kid, and had really sculpted this kid into oblivion to make him look like a weird Wookiee. And so I didn't have an Adventure People figure to scan or anything. And so I had to do that one straight from scratch. But yeah, honestly, all the other holiday special figures, because I did.
We interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this. Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet.
Oh my, we're doomed.
Wait, salvation. Hooray, we're saved, DOV2. Limited edition custom artist made action figures and DKE toys.
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures.
DKE.
I did damn near every character in that whole awful special.
Yeah.
Some of those, the more elaborate characters, like the four-armed cook lady, chef lady, those were a lot harder than the Wookiees, honestly.
Yeah.
That took a long time.
My favorite thing about the Wookiees is like, that's an alien species. And yet this thing that signifies that it's a wife is we just like throw boobs on her. Like that is an alien species. We have no concept that you're going to make. Like, it's such a funny thing.
And if you watch the holiday special, it's not like that's what they did with the costumes.
Right.
You know, they didn't just slap some boobs on her and call her a female Wookiee. And actually, if I remember correctly, that character was actually played by a dude in that suit. So yeah, it was just funny that when they went to make the toys, they were like, sure, just boobs.
I'll do it. Jeez. So to walk me through, that probably puts us at like 2022, 2023-ish. Thereabouts. Walk me through the controversy that happens. Both sculptors, both of you are well known in, I don't know if there's a sculpting community, but both of you are well known. Okay, good. And so we've seen, and then all of a sudden one day we like get on Instagram and it is just back and forth. Walk me through what happens.
It's so ridiculous. And I always try to remember that at the end of the day, we're grown ass men in our basements making toys. And if we can't have fun doing that, then we just need to get the hell out of the game.
You know?
So I never take it too seriously, except when somebody like literally really tries to steal money from me and kind of take away and accuse me of doing something that I didn't do. And that's, it's just kind of, it was, the whole thing was super childish, but the long story short of it is this sculptor, I had downloaded a bunch of his files in my early days of learning how to sculpt, or learning how to print. I mean, and his scans of vintage Star Wars figures were incomplete. Like he didn't have all the figures. And so I started thinking like, hey, you know, I could scan, if I got a scanner and figured out how to use it, I could complete the collection. And then, because there were so many customizers out there who wanted to make kitbash Star Wars figures, and they needed pieces from harder to find figures.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to, nobody wants to cut up these old toys if they don't have the rarer ones, especially. And so I'm like, I got all the figures here. If I could just scan them, I bet there'd be a good market for that. I could, at bare minimum, maybe recoup my expenses for the scanner. And then everybody could have access to these parts. So I started scanning the figures that this other guy didn't offer. And they were very well received. I put them out and I kept going until I had done all the ones that he hadn't done. And then there were a whole bunch of his that the quality just wasn't all that great. I don't know what kind of scanner he was using. And so I was like, well, maybe I'll just scan some of the ones that people complain about in the sculpting community, as you mentioned, like that people complain about and say like, yeah, this scan could be better. Maybe I'll just offer alternatives to that. So that's what I did. I did a handful of those. And in the meantime, I was sculpting my own stuff and putting those out too. And then one day I get a string of nasty messages from this guy who I had been in contact with before. We had a good rapport, and nothing negative ever. And he went on this long tirade about me stealing his files and passing them off as my own. He contacted Cults 3D, told them that I had stole his stuff, and they pulled down all of my files. And so I had to spend a day of my life putting together evidence that I'd actually scanned these figures myself and that they were mine. And fortunately I keep all of my raw files from when I scan things. And because I'm a huge nerd from the business world, I put together a little PowerPoint presentation and I sent it to the guys at Cults 3D, and they were like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. You're absolutely right. The guy was like, we've never seen a presentation like this, which of course they have it, because it was completely stupid that I did it. But they were like, you know, we've worked with this other guy so much. We just trusted him. We should have talked to you before we took down your files, whatever. They reinstated everything. And in the meantime, this guy had been trying, he had told me and had told them that he was going to try to convince Cults to give him all of the money that I had made over the last, you know, 6 months of doing this or whatever.
Jeez.
Of course was obvious BS.
Yeah.
And so I had to put together a series of like, you know, side-by-side comparisons to prove that these files were my own and all of that. And ultimately it ended up okay. And that guy, like, I got what could best be described as a half-assed apology from.
Yeah, you posted that. I did see that.
You know, and I posted this stuff, not necessarily to shame this dude, but just because like this guy had spent the better part of a couple of days dragging me through the mud and telling people that I was a thief and all this, and I'm like, dude, I'm too old for this. Like, I just want to make toys and everybody be cool. And you're gonna do. I had to clear my name. It was the dumbest thing, and I'm so glad to be, you know, completely disconnected from that, you know. And I've said before, like, if anybody wants to see my original source files, I'm happy to share them, because it's just so
Yeah,
so ridiculous.
Jim Swearingen and Steven Geddes, who sculpted these figures, could come back and clean house on how much theft has been committed.
100%. And we all in this community, anybody who sells any of this stuff based on IP that we don't own.
Yeah.
We exist by the grace of the generosity of the companies that do own the IP. And they all, in my mind, I mean, Hasbro knows who I am. Hasbro knows who these people, I mean, not like the higher ups at Hasbro, but like people who are work at Hasbro on the Star Wars license, who are friendly in the fan and customizer community, interact with us all the time. They know who we are, like we as the customizers, and they know that we're doing this and they're cool with it because we're not stepping on their toes. We are celebrating the brand and everybody kind of wins. It's like everybody learned a lesson from when Metallica sued Napster and we pissed off all of their own fans. Like nobody wants to be Metallica in that scenario. And so, but to your point, at the end of the day, at any point, any of these companies or the whoever sculpted them or whatever could come in and be like, you can't do this anymore. Yeah. And what am I going to get mad about that? I'm going to be like, well, I mean,
you got me.
I get it. Thanks for letting me play in your sandbox as long as you did. You know?
Yeah, I think about that a lot. Like even some of my ideas get based off of other toys that exist, and they though they may not show, they may show a minor similarity. It started as something else.
Yeah.
And so, which is already, you know, I there was a scary article I just read from a law office that said that the biggest thing that we misunderstand about copyright is the 30% rule.
What's the 30% rule?
So it's like if you adjust it 30%, it's changed. Okay. That's not what that means. And we, a lot of us have stood behind that, like, oh, it's 30%.
Right.
But it doesn't, like, that's not how that works. And anything like my logo for Toys on Tap is very definitely R2-D2.
Yeah.
30% of his body, I would say 50% of his body, is now a mug of beer.
It's beer.
Right? Yeah. Because that's how the show started.
Sure.
If Disney came along and saw that, if I got too big, they could wipe that clean.
Yeah.
That's not, like, it's still him.
In half a second. Yeah.
Yeah, they know. And so I think, like, I get really nervous when people say, like, no, it's 30%. It's not. It's not. They could still kill you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, again, I don't think it's in their interest
to
pursue things like that at this point. That's why, you know, I get requests from people who know, who have bought my scans of vintage Kenner. People request scans of modern stuff. They they request, they like, hey, are you going to scan the retro series? Like, you know, could I, the Mon Mothma, the, actually I got this for my kids, like one of these battle droids, like, I really wish that they had released this battle droid individually so that people could army build with them if they wanted to. Am I going to scan this and sell the files? Hell no, I'm not going to do that because this is a product you can go to the store today and buy. This is not from the 19, this is not from 1982. If I, you know, print if I print a character that hasn't been on store shelves in 40 years, I'm not taking money out of anybody's pocket at that point. But this, like, I'm not going to scan modern stuff and sell it. That's crazy. Not only is it, would it get me in trouble, but it's just not a cool thing to do, I don't
think. Yeah.
And I think that the companies who own these IPs, that's kind of the line that we skirt, right? Like we kind of skate along there where it's like we're furthering the fandom and maybe making a few dollars along the way. Like you said, this is not a huge profit business, but it's not taking anything away from them. And that's I feel like at any point they could say, well, we don't really care.
Yeah.
We're going to shut this down anyway. And if they did, there'd be a lot of whining, but none of it would be coming from me. I'd just be like, well, that was fun.
And what's so funny is like, it gets seen as almost like, oh, the big guy stepping on a little guy. Maybe. Yeah, but the little guy also did use the big guy's toys. And so maybe we just go along with it.
Yeah, exactly.
As you've been sculpting, you've sculpted and scanned so many things. Mm-hmm. I love Ewoks, and I've seen that you've sculpted or scanned all of them, and you've just gone nuts. So the question then has to, like, what's next?
I will always have a soft spot for Star Wars. I'm continuing to make new Star Wars characters, but I'm getting less and less inspired to do that. And so, you know, I made a bunch of figures for the Andor series because they didn't make any retro style Andor figures. And so those were requested a lot. I made a bunch of them and people like them, and that's great. The Acolyte, the new Star Wars show that comes out in just a couple of days, I don't really care about making any figures from that. I mean, maybe after I watch it, if I'm like in love with the show, maybe I'll sculpt some figures. But like, I'm a lot more interested these days in doing more creative things. And I mean original characters, mashups, weird stuff, random things. I'm getting into, I've sold a few painted figures, but mostly just sculpted printed kits for people to paint themselves. But I'm getting more into, I'm going to do some short runs of painted figures on card. I finally bought all the supplies to actually card and make my own cards and all nice. That. And but it's all going to be kind of weird stuff, like the Mac Tonight figure. Like the reason I have this on my desk right now is because I'm doing a short run of these guys that'll be fully painted when I'm done with them. And I'm going to card them up on some ridiculous card and sell maybe, you know, 5 of them, 10 of them, whatever, just awesome. Because it's fun. And then I saw this guy, and for those of you who are listening, I'm holding up a Teen Wolf action figure. I saw that guy in his little basketball uniform, and I just, of course, thought about Chewbacca and thought, like, I'd really like to put Chewbacca in a basketball outfit because that'd be hilarious. So this is my test print that I did over the weekend that is Chewbacca in a basketball uniform. And instead of saying Beavers on his jersey, it says Wookiees.
Nice.
Dumb stuff. Like, I just want to do some fun stuff like that. I'm going to do a short run of these and card them up. And then things that are completely not related to any IP at all, that just completely original, much more artistic things where I can really just be free to do whatever the heck I want. I don't know if people will care about these things because I've been doing the Star Wars thing for so long, and that's obviously just like a huge popular IP. I really hope that people like these weirdo things that I come up with, though.
Yeah. So
we'll see, because I don't want to just be the Star Wars guy.
Yeah. I mean, what's tough is like eventually, because there is an end to Star Wars. Like, once you have all the scans and all the sculpts. Yeah.
Well, you would think, but people email me literally every day asking for the most obscure characters you've ever seen. And I've made characters that have 0.2 seconds of screen time.
Yeah.
In the background of some scene that people want to build this scene, and they'll request it. And I'm like, I think maybe I could sell a few of those if I went to the trouble of making it. So sure, I'll do it. Yeah. But some of these requests, I mean, the most obscure, I mean, it really seems like there is no bottom for how obscure some of these characters are.
Yeah. I in Star Wars, it's crazy. I mean, the Amon Amon figure got made, and he is in it for like the smallest amount of time. And
every kid wanted that figure because he was so freaking weird looking.
You know,
like, they knew, like, it doesn't matter. He wasn't on the screen for 5 seconds. Like, look at this figure. This design is crazy. He comes with a staff with human skulls on it. Like, yeah, I wanted that as a kid. I never saw him in the movie.
Yeah. My hope is one day that I can influence a sculptor like yourself or someone else to do a gallery show. There are scenes in Star Wars that this is how I envision the show going. You ready? So there's, I can't remember the exact movie. It's one of the old ones when the Jawa gets thrown off the Rontu. Like, it like comes back. Yeah. Whatever scene that is.
The special edition of A New Hope. Yes.
There we go. If you like had the cell of just that one, and then below it is a figure of everyone in that scene in its own packaging.
Yeah.
That's, and then you just do that at random scenes in all the different movies. That is the funniest gallery show in the world.
The absolute depth that you could get into.
Yeah.
I mean, especially if you start factoring in what, like, the special editions, like you said, where like George pasted in 5,000 extra dudes in the background of every scene.
Like, and they're all just normal.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be like just dudes in street clothes back there. Yeah.
Which is my favorite. Like, this is just a random guy. I think stuff like that would be funny. I think there's a scene in The Mandalorian where he looks up and all the Salacious Crumb characters are in the tree.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and then like,
and they're like cooking one, aren't they? Like cooking, they're like cooking one too.
So you take a screenshot of just that, and then it's just all different of those characters.
Love it.
Those are weird stuff. I mean, it's crazy to see. And then we talked a little bit, like, this is your full time gig where you're sculpting and people buy your sculpts and your scans and stuff, which probably in toy making, that's the way to go.
Yeah.
Like, get on a popular IP so people can just continuously buy your sculpts.
Yeah. It's good, but it's like, my two revenue streams really are like selling prints of these things. And I do most of that through Etsy, but some of it just direct to people through Instagram or PayPal or whatever. And then I sell the files for the Kenner figures that I scanned, but also for my original designs, I sell those. And, you know, that is like passive income, because whenever I upload the files, people download them. I don't have to do anything. But my printers in my workshop are running like 24/7 to keep up with all the orders for physical stuff. And so, you know, I'll go upstairs and my wife will say, like, you know, do you have a big workload today or whatever? And it depends on what that from day to day, like right now, for example, I'm caught up on printing, like all the orders that I have. I don't feel like I have to stay up all hours in the night printing to fulfill the orders that people have placed. I'm on a good schedule with that. But I still have to sculpt new stuff because I got to feed the monkey, you know, like I gotta keep that going. And so the things that I'm working on right now, I've got like, you know, 4 or 5 things going in Nomad right now in various states of completion, will be released over the next couple of weeks. And it does take up a lot of time to keep that clip going. And because it's my full-time gig right now, as in, like, you know, I was laid off from my main job because the entertainment industry is in the trash can right now. Whenever I get my next like main gig, then I'll still continue to do this, but it'll go back to side hustle territory. You know, it'll be much, my output volume will have to be much less, and I may end up outsourcing some of the printing at some point. You know, I've talked with a few reputable printers about some sort of arrangement where we could do that in the future, which would be good. But for now, it's, yeah, I mean, I get up in the morning, I send a bunch of emails, like feeling out industry stuff to maybe get another full-time job. And then I'm also focused on scaling this business to where it actually pays for stuff.
It's really just which one gets bigger quicker, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's either the toys or it's back into entertainment.
Exactly. And I'd be kind of a dum-dum to not try to pursue both of those avenues to some degree. See what happens, because we're, you know, everybody talks about the gig economy or whatever, but we're in a world these days where it's very common for people to just have multiple sources of income and just do a bunch of random things. And if I end up being a guy who half of my income comes from sculpting toys and doing shows and whatever else, and the other half comes from, you know, I don't know, business consulting work, okay, great, that's fine, I don't care. So
holy moly, dude, it's been such a pleasure having you on the podcast today.
Absolutely, man.
The last part of the podcast is a place where you can plug all your stuff, how people get to you, how they submit characters if they want to see them sculpt, all that stuff. And then after that, we move into a nitty gritty episode that goes on the Patreon. It's an extra 10 to 15 with each artist that's artist specific. But yeah, plug away everything that you've got going and how people get to you.
Sure. So I'm at Funky McClunky in most places. And then I'm on, I mean, that includes like Instagram, YouTube, Facebook. I sell my scans of old toys and replacement parts and all of that, in addition to my original sculptures, through cults3d.com. Just go there and search for Funky McClunky. Or go to funkymcclunky.com, and there's links to my Etsy shop, all of that stuff I just mentioned. And I do post, like, not nearly as much as I should, but I post pages and articles on there about, like, how to paint 3D prints, what types of resin to use if you're printing your own at home, tutorials like that, mainly just because I get bombarded with questions all the time and I needed somewhere to just point people to answer those things. So that's how you find me.
Heck yeah. Dude, again, thank you so much.
Absolutely, man. It's been a great pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.